From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
What fertilizer should I feed my fill-in-the-blank plant? A lot of you ask me this about things ranging from magnolias to tomatoes, and so soil fertility and how to best achieve it is today's topic with longtime organic gardener and author Lee Reich, who among his three postgraduate degrees has one in, you guessed it, soil science. So first, these messages.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com. Underwriting support from High Mowing Organic Seeds, the first independently owned farm-based seed company proudly serving organic gardeners and farmers with 100% organic and non-GMO vegetable, herb, and flower seeds. HighMowingSeeds.com/awaytogarden.
All those different fertilizer formulas in the garden center have given many of us the idea that we need to add something, no matter what. But is that always the case? Lee Reich, author most recently of The Ever Curious Gardener, Using a Little Natural Science for a Much Better Garden, is here to talk about building healthy soil and growing healthy plants. Hi, Lee.
Hi, Margaret.
I knew who to call for this one. The soil scientist with all the PhDs or whatever.
Just one
of those, but a couple of master's degrees too, yeah.
Right.
So we had better come clean first before we get started on the details right off the bat. When's the last time you bought bagged fertilizer, do you think?
That's the toughest question you're going to ask me today.
Exactly.
Not in memory.
Exactly. And for me, I have to say maybe every 5 or 7 years, I look at what is laughingly called the lawn and I think, oh, maybe I should get some of that processed sewage sludge, organic fertilizer, whatever stuff. And, you know, I feel sorry for the lawn. And literally, it's like every 5 or 7 years, and then I don't do it again for at least that long. So you and I are not...
I'd be afraid to do that because then I'd have to mow the lawn more.
So I'm asked, as I said in the introduction, I'm asked about this a lot, you know, the what fertilizer do I need on my fill-in-the-blank. Are you asked that a lot, too, by people?
Yeah, people, and marketing goes a long way to having them think they know what fertilizer they need.
Right. So what's Lee's basic fertilizer philosophy? And this is, you do cover this in the book, The Ever Curious Gardener, but tell us, like, what's sort of the basic idea? How do you think about fertilization?
So my basic philosophy with fertilization is very simple. And first of all, it is organic. and there's a reason it's organic, because I think, and I could tell you the reasons, but organic fertilization is better than non-organic fertilization.
Right.
And then it becomes a question of what exactly is organic fertilization.
And? You're going to leave us hanging?
I was waiting for the prompt. So organic fertilization means really the organic in organic gardening comes from organic materials,
right,
which are bulky materials like straw, wood chips, compost, anything that was or is living.
Right.
So the whole thing is that this is really the best way to nourish plants, and there are certain situations where you might have to do it non-organically, very specific situations. But generally, organic fertilization is best because this is how plants have evolved to feed best, and also it's simpler.
Mm-hmm.
So. My go-to fertilizer, and it can't really be termed as a fertilizer because you have to have a certain level of nutrients in something for it to be called a fertilizer. And my go-to fertilizer, except it's not a fertilizer, is compost.
Right.
And compost is not technically legally a fertilizer because it's not high enough in nutrients. It's not concentrated enough in nutrients. But this is exactly what I'm looking for, something that's not concentrated in nutrients, something that has all this bulk material associated with it that really benefits the soil in so many other ways. You know, it's analogous to people. People used to think, you know, like in the 60s, probably people came up with this idea, you know, just take a pill, you won't have to eat. You'll just take a pill and it'll provide all your nutrition. And then they began to realize the benefits of fiber in the diet.
Right.
So organic materials are to a plant diet what fiber is to a human diet. It doesn't provide a high concentration of nutrients, but it provides many other benefits and also at the same time adequate nutrients.
Right. And so in a way, when you said a minute ago something about like that it's you're following the way that plants have sort of evolved being fed. And I think of like the forest, right? And I think of trees dropping their leaves beneath them and even herbaceous plants, you know, withering in the at frost or whatever. And all that bulk, organic, fibrous material falling and eventually degrading into the soil. In a forest, it would be the duff layer. I think of that as like high fiber, bulky, organic fertilization, even though it's not technically fertilization. Is that what you're saying is the inspiration?
Yes, exactly that. There is one difference, though, and so I grow a lot of fruits and vegetables.
Yes.
So especially with vegetables, which really take a lot of nutrients, take up a lot of nutrients from the soil, you can't just keep removing vegetables and not add more than just their leaves as they fall to the soil.
Right,
Just even digging them back in. So you have to add something extra. So that's why I actually make compost. People could buy compost also. There's a lot of good places to buy compost nowadays. And I just add extra compost to the soil.
Right.
That's basically the only thing. I have very intensively grown vegetables, and that's the sole way that I feed them.
So when people are worried, you know, again, someone the other day wrote to me their magnolia. They wanted to know what to feed their magnolia. And at this time of year, you know, as spring turns to summer and, you know, everyone wants to know how often to feed their tomatoes and so forth. but you and I aren't doing that. We're instead, you know, I use that kind of expression, you know, feed the soil. Like we've been for a million years doing this protocol that's about soil fertility and tilth and building up the organic matter in the soil. But do we ever worry? Do you see things and think, oh, gosh, I better do something because that plant's not well? Do you take a soil test? And, you know, do you know what I mean? Are there ever moments when you want to do an analysis?
Well, I do about every 10 years. I guess I get slightly worried. I think maybe I'm deluding myself and I'm doing something wrong. So then I do a soil test.
Uh-huh.
And it always comes out fine. The one thing interesting about the soil test is it turns out, you know, when you fertilize organically, the main nutrient of concern, because when you fertilize organically, you not only are you feeding them N, P, and K, nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium that, you know, everybody you see on the fertilizer labels of packaged fertilizer, but you're also feeding them just incidentally a whole slew of micronutrients and other macronutrients. But the only nutrient that really would be of concern with organic fertilization would be nitrogen. So there is no good soil test for nitrogen. So basically, I look at how the plants are growing,
right,
and that's how I tell if they have enough nitrogen. But the interesting thing with nitrogen is, and also any of these things you mentioned, like you know, people wondering, should I feed my tomatoes now? And then, you know, often on a fertilizer bag, they'll talk about, well, feed now, and then feed like in a few weeks again, then feed in a few weeks again, you know, keep side dressing it. Which, you know, I know people like to fiddle around, but, you know, you could put your time to better use. Because if you fertilize organically, basically the nutrients are released from the organic matter slowly and in sync, slowly in response to both moisture and warmth.
Mm-hmm.
And guess what? Plants also grow in response to moisture and warmth. So therefore, the nutrients are being released somewhat in sync with plant growth. So this is why one reason I think that organic fertilization is better than fertilizing with chemicals.
Right.
Because, first of all, it's released in sync with plant growth, and then all you got to do is fertilize once a season. You don't have to do it on and on. Once a year, in my vegetable garden, which feed, as I said, are the heaviest feeders. Once a year, I put down compost, and that's it. I don't think about fertilization again. And things that don't take as much nutrients, like, for instance, my fruit trees or my ornamentals, I just use any organic mulch I can find. You know, it could be wood chips, it could be straw, it could be hay, any of those things. They're not rich in nutrients, and they don't release nitrogen initially as fast as compost, but they are releasing it over time, and as you get a buildup in soil organic matter over a long period of time, it's not like, you know, you have to fertilize this month for next month's growth.
Right.
You're adding stuff to the soil now that's for years and years it's going to be nourishing your plants.
Right. Because soil really serves a lot of different purposes. It helps plants, well, like they root into it, you know, so it helps them stand up. It does a lot of different things. I mean, the soil as a medium. And even if your soil has all the elements present, if you have, the full soil analysis, and one of the things that I've read many times about, for instance, what is it called? Blossom end rot on tomatoes, you know, when you get,
mm-hmm.
It's not sometimes that elements are missing, so dosing it with a bag of whatever, it may not help. It's that even if the elements are there, they can't be taken up because there's some, I always, as a non-scientist, I will say, mechanical failure. There's some issue. Maybe there's been drought and then ample water or, you know, irregular watering or whatever. There's been some stressor maybe that has limited the ability to take up certain elements. I mean, isn't there a complex, it's more complex than, ooh, I don't have enough of this or enough of that.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's one of the other beauties of organic fertilization is that you don't have to be as specific with a lot of other aspects of the soil because the organic fertilization, and when I say organic fertilization, I don't mean putting down a concentrated organic fertilizer.
Right, not a bagged material. Right.
Yeah, I used to use soybean meal, which is 7% nitrogen, because I thought I needed that extra nitrogen in addition to the compost, and then for years I made a calculation, but I was afraid to, really just walk my talk on that one, but then I figured I should do that, and it's been fine. But bulky organic matter has a lot of physical, a lot of nutritional, and a lot of biological benefits in the soil also. So, for instance, you mentioned the blossom end rot. If you typically blossom end rot comes because the plant can't take up calcium and transport it within it fast enough, often when it's dry out. But if you add a lot of organic matter to the soil, it helps it hold moisture, which might help with blossom end rot.
Right.
Or another example is people often, if you look at charts, I always find it somewhat humorous that if you look at charts for pH, what the pH of the soil should be, 6.8 for this plant, 6.3 for this plant, 7.1 for another plant, and people, get very exacting with this. And if you have a lot of organic matter, it buffers pH, so you don't really have to be as exact, getting the pH exactly right. Just add a lot of organic matter, and sort of everything will be okay.
So you said you, quote, fertilize organically each year. And so how much you're using compost, and I think, and how much top dressing, because you're no-till in your vegetable areas. I know you don't disturb the soil. In some areas you haven't disturbed it in 30 years. I mean, you even carefully, when you're cleaning up in the fall, you don't just yank everything out and upend the soil. You're careful about how you even clean up. So how much compost do you add? How deep?
I made a calculation once of how much, because you can sort of estimate how fast, from organic matter, stable organic matter, which compost is,
yes,
how fast it would mineralize nitrogen. And mineralization is the changing of organic nitrogen, which plants generally cannot take up, to a type of nitrogen that plants can take up, which is basically nitrate nitrogen and ammonium nitrogen. And it turns out that if I put down an inch, 1 inch depth of finished compost a year, that will feed my vegetables for the whole year. So I put down that every year. And as I said, my vegetables are very intensively planted, and I start early in the season. I go, you know, late into December. So, and my plants don't suffer from any nutritional deficiencies.
Right. And so you make compost beautifully, and I'll give a link in this transcript of this show so that people can read our conversation about that and watch some of your videos about, I think one of your videos is called something like, "You won't believe what I compost," or something.
And you won't.
And he does. He really does, including his old blue jeans. So you make a lot of compost. I make a lot of compost, but not as beautifully maybe as you do. And I do top dress my beds, as you just were describing, similar amounts each year, and have been doing that for eons. I also, even in my ornamental beds, which, as you point out, aren't as demanding because we're not like harvesting, replanting, like in the veggie areas, I use composted stable bedding. A local farmer who used to be a dairy farmer has turned his operation into this instead, and gathers all this material that's been utilized in animal stalls and composts it hot. And, you know, and it's kind of like it's bigger than wood shavings and smaller than wood chips, but it's been, you know, animal wastes have been deposited on it first. And so it's kind of like a little manure and so forth as well. And honestly, I mean, people come to open days and they say, in the ornamental areas, they're like, "Oh, how do you grow that so beautiful? How do you grow that? How do you grow that?" And I'm like, "I don't know. I've just been putting this stuff on the soil every year for 30 years. And I can dig with my hand, you know, I can dig a hole with, like to plant a plant, I can dig a hole with my hand. You know, it's so friable," or whatever the word would be. So
yeah, that is the word.
Yeah, friable, yeah. So, With you mentioned pH and the buffering effect that organic matter can have when it's present in the soil on pH and tolerance around pH. But with extreme plants, like you grow beautiful blueberries, do you do something different there? What are you doing these days with blueberries in an ongoing way?
Well, the blueberries, as you're alluding to, do need much more acidic soil than most plants.
Right.
So initially and periodically, I do add sulfur, which is a naturally mined mineral.
Right.
Which is really the most reliable way of lowering the pH. But I don't really do it that often. It's like I used to do it every year, and I haven't done it for a few years. And basically, my fertility fertility program, which is sounds more complicated than it is, for my blueberries is I lay each fall, after the blueberry leaves fall on top of the ground, I replenish or put down about a 4-inch depth of any weed-free organic material. And some years it's wood chips because it's, you know, so it's free.
Uh-huh.
Free and wood-free.
Yes.
Weed-free. And some years it'd be wood chips, some years it'd be autumn leaves that, you know, people put out in their bags, and I pick them up and put them under there. And I used to do, soybean meal, you know, for the nitrogen, and then some wheat-free organic material. But my blueberries actually grow so much that I think they're growing too much. So so now I stopped using the soybean meal. So
yeah.
It's really just wood chips. And I will periodically check the pH, but more importantly, I'll look at the leaves, because the leaves show what's called an interveinal chlorosis, where the veins stay dark, but the rest of the leaf is turning yellow.
Yes.
If I see that, that would be a definite sign that the soil needs to be more acidic.
Right.
But really, it's not that critical, because I keep, the effect of all that organic matter, as I said, does buffer.
It buffers, yeah.
The effect of the soil pH.
Well, and with the transcript of this, I'll also give the link to our, more thorough conversation about blueberries, but I was just curious about that. In the last few minutes, all this organic matter, I know you have a sign outside your, right? I believe you have a sign outside your driveway that says something like wood chips welcome or something. What's
Wood chips wanted.
Wanted. And so like local arborists can dump off a load at Lee's. Is that the idea? So you're recruiting the stuff, yeah?
Right. Yeah, I get usually a local landscaper dumps off a giant truckload of leaves each fall. And then arborists, when I put the sign out, eventually I do get a load of wood chips. And then I do a local development where they have tons of trees and everybody rakes up their leaves. I cruise that neighborhood and I also have a mailing list, email list from those people because it's really close by. And I get truckload upon truckload of leaves to spread all over, not in my vegetable garden, but I'll put that under trees, blueberries.
Right.
That.
So you really, as much as you can get your hands on, is what you want, because the idea being that this is going to improve the tilth and the fertility and the moisture holding capacity and all kinds of good things, the microbial life, all the good living stuff.
Yeah, microbial life is not an insignificant reason for doing this. Also, I mean,
right,
when you feed. This is what microbes eat, this organic matter, high carbon material. And by giving them all this food, you really foster the growth of beneficial microorganisms.
Right. So do you...
And then even also with the nutritional part, the nice thing about the organic matter is not only as it decomposes slowly, it feeds the soil, it also releases nutrients from the soil that are already locked up in the rocks, you know, small rock particles.
Right.
And also it's an organic, in the organic chemical sense, matrix to some nutrients in the soil, like iron, that makes it more available. So even though iron might be in the soil, it might be unavailable to plants, but when the organic matter gets around it, then plants can take it up. So there's all sorts of benefits, and then the physical benefits, better aeration, better water retention. So it's I feel sort of like a preacher, but it is all good.
Well, I think two of us, and we came at it from different perspectives. You had the scientific training. I did not. You know, I was a home gardener, self-taught, whatever. You know, two different spots, I mean, albeit in the same general zone, but right. Two different spots, two different soil types that we were working with. You know, I'm on a steep hillside, you know, whatever. It works. It really works.
Exactly.
I mean,
yeah, it works.
It really works. And
I think the important thing is that people, two things, is to keep things simple. If people, generally, simple works better.
Yes.
And also to not be too swayed by ad copy.
Yeah, no, I know. I know.
Yeah.
And to feel as if you're, oh, I didn't give it that, and so I've done something wrong. Put your efforts into building the soil, yeah? Yeah.
Right.
Well, Lee, I'm always interested to talk to you, and I love the book, The Ever Curious Gardener. We're going to have a book giveaway with the transcript as well, so I'll tell people about that. And it's good to talk to you, as always. I hope I see you soon.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Underwriting support from High Mowing Organic Seeds, the first independently owned farm-based seed company proudly serving organic gardeners and farmers with 100% organic and non-GMO vegetable, herb, and flower seeds. HighMowingSeeds.com/awaytogarden. Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
Nice to speak to all of you again, of course, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version on Stitcher or iTunes or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or at Facebook and Instagram as @awaytogarden. Happy gardening meantime.
Away to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.